Larry, let's get started with what's going on right now in Syria. We've learned that Israel is attacking Syria. On the other hand, we have a joint military exercise between Russia and Turkey. What's going on in Syria right now?
Well, I don't know specifically today. I haven't seen the news on that. But the United States started off 12 years ago now, 11, 13 years ago, with an effort to overthrow Bashar al-Assad, working in tandem with the British, arming Islamic jihadists. I thought we were fighting Islamic jihadists and the war on terror, but turns out that we decided to recruit some and work closely with Turkey on providing weapons to these fighters, because the Turks were particularly upset and obsessed with the Kurds and the threat that they posed. Through the United States basically launched a civil war, and we've got U.S. troops based there. We've got the United States conducting Predator drone strikes on targets inside Syria. But what's happened over the course of the last year and a half is Turkey's now starting to sing a different tune. They're going to come. They're seeking to reestablish relations with Bashar al-Assad. Assad has been welcomed back into the League of Arab Nations. Before, he had been banned.
Larry, can you do something with your mic? I think it's hidden somewhere.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. So, the situation on the United States position there is, let's say, it's more precarious. It's not stable, and the Israelis have been bombing inside Syria for a long, long time anyway. But I think this is, it's got to be viewed in the context that Syria is now out of the doghouse. And because of its strong military relationship with Russia, easing of tensions with Turkey, that it's going to leave Israel in a more isolated position than before.
Yeah, it seems that Biden is asking Israel to withdraw the troops from the border between Egypt and Gaza. And how's that going on in your opinion? Is Israel going to withdraw the troops or they're not going to do that?
No, are you kidding? That I think that's all meaningless talk. The people need to get finally come to grips with reality. There's not going to be a negotiated settlement between the Zionists and the Palestinians. It's not going to happen. Israel, the Zionists that are in control right now, I'm not talking about the Israelis of the 1960s. What we're talking about are these ultra nationalist religious loons have zero interest in cohabitating, living next to a Palestinian. They want to exterminate them. They don't view the Palestinians as humans. They're subhuman. People need to get that, wrap their minds around that, because that's what we're looking at here. And the Israelis, they say that they criticize Hamas for saying from the river to the sea. Well, the Israelis want the same thing, except they want to control the land from the river to the sea. They claim that God gave it to them and nobody else has a right to it, and they're going to take it and do whatever they have to do to keep it. So, this theater, political theater that's underway right now with Blinken claiming, oh, we may have peace at hand. Yeah, right. The modern day Neville Chamberlain without the little mustache, because this was all Blinken's ploy, was to try to get something that they could have touted at the Democrat National Convention. Well, convention's over, and the deal still is not done.
It seems that they do have a proposal, but the problem is that Hamas doesn't agree with that proposal, and nobody knows right. what's in that proposal.
Well, yeah, plus Hamas was excluded from the room when they were talking about the proposal. So it's like, what kind of negotiation is that? That's not a negotiation in good faith. This, you know, it recognize that going back to the foundation of Hamas, shortly after Hamas came into being and began pursuing its independence movement, that's when the Israeli intelligence service started funneling money to Hamas. Why? Because they wanted Hamas to sabotage any peace talks that were underway with Fatah and PLO. And they wanted Hamas to do it so that way the Israelis would avoid any blame for sabotaging the peace. And it's always been the Palestinians. I've got some good friends who told me in all sincerity, boy, those Palestinians, they could never accept a good deal. They've always walked away. And I finally said, wait, you're wrong. This was that's what you were led to believe. But the reality is something else, something quite different. So what we're seeing right now, it's just more of that theater. There's nobody in the United States is seriously interested in an actual peace settlement. Because frankly, to have it, you're going to have to allow the Gaza, the people, the Palestinians to have and secure Gaza without being in an enclosed concentration camp to be able to freely come and go. Israel's not going to accede to that. And then you've got all of the settlers in the West Bank that are busy encroaching upon the lands of the Palestinian people there. No, so it's, you know, let's stop with this nonsense about the negotiations. Someone's serious about stopping it, Russia, China, and the United States would intervene militarily and force 800,000 settlers out of the West Bank, force them back into the Israel boundaries as they were set up in 1947-48. And protect the Palestinians, let them, go about their lives, and then, keep them separated. Tell the Israelis, you do what you need to do here in your territory, and they'll do what they need to do, and leave each other alone. But that's not going to happen.
It seems, Larry, we are hearing you from your hands free. I don't know if that's the case, because anytime you move, it makes some noises.
Well, let me see what's going on here with the sound system. Oh, that's the problem. Yeah, it didn't. When it rebooted, it didn't recognize the microphone.
Yeah.
Okay. I will watch the movement then.
Okay. Then we are having John Kirby talking about that the U.S. administration is discussing with Ukraine the prospect of increasing the depth of airstrikes on Russian territory with American weapons. Do they really want to give the permission to Ukrainians? Or providing them with weapons capable, or because so far we didn't see anything like this that Zelensky was asking for, but right now we're hearing from Washington.
Yeah, well, we got to stop with this mythology, pretending that the United States is not at war with Russia. Pretending that the United States is just simply fighting, trying to help the Ukrainians protect themselves, but this isn't about attacking Russia. Of course it is. This is a war against Russia. If the Russians, let's reverse roles. Let's say that it was Ukraine that had now entered Poland to recover territory, and that Russia was arming Ukraine to carry out attacks in Poland. We'd view that as a breach of international order. That Article 51 of the United Nations could then be put into effect, and we wouldn't tolerate it for a minute. It'd be an act of war. Well, we're doing the same thing to Russia, and now we're going to be surprised when Russia responds. The Russians have been extraordinarily patient up to this point, and they've actually gone out of their way to try to avoid escalating and expanding the war, where they get directly into conflict with the Poles, the Germans, the Romanians, the Brits, the United States. But I think you know, we're coming to a time when that's no longer going to be the case. Their patience will be exhausted, and that ought to keep some people in Washington D.C. awake at night. It's very dangerous.
Yeah, based on Washington, they're trying to make a buffer zone in the Kursk region. How's that going?
Oh my God! I mean, they're getting slaughtered. The Russians report over 5,000. I think it's like 5,400 killed in action so far on the part of the Ukrainians. The estimated size of the force was, you know, maybe as large, they'd say around 30,000. I don't believe that for a minute. I think it's more likely around 15,000. But at least one third, if not one half, of the fighting force that Ukraine started with 2 weeks ago is now dead. And that's not counting the number of wounded. The real damage, apart from the human cost, is the tanks, armored vehicles, armored personnel carriers, Bradley fighting vehicles. They've been destroyed right and left because they don't have any place to hide. And Ukraine doesn't have any effective air cover. So it's just, you know, that it's accelerating Ukraine's military defeat. Let's put it that way.
Do we know how long does it take for Russia to move these forces out of the region, or we still don't know what Russia is doing specifically?
Well, no, what Russia's, you know, there was the expectation, maybe the hope on the part of the Western planners, that this would have forced Russia to divert troops from the Donbass up to Kursk. But Russia already had at least 100,000 man army up in the Belarus area near Kursk. So they're simply diverting them. Russia has ample manpower to send into that operation. And in part, it's also working out, they've got some experienced units, the Akhmet Battalion with Aladinov, the Chechens are fighting. They're experienced troops. But along with them are, let's call it, untested new troops who have been recruits over the last year, who are in newly formed divisions. They're being introduced into this as well as a chance to, it's like live fire training, only it's the real thing. They're not just doing simulations. So they're able to get some experience on that. The Ukrainians are in these different villages, holed up. So they're surrounded. They're running out of ammunition. The only food they're going to be getting is anything they can steal off the local population. The tanks and vehicles are running out of gas, and they don't have any way to refuel them. So the Russians are just surrounding them, blocking them off, and strangling them.
Yeah, we are getting reports that show 20 out of the 31 Abrams tanks delivered to Ukraine have been destroyed as we talk. And how about the equipment of the Ukrainian army? Do we know, do we have any sort of information that shows the West is sending more weapons just because of this attack? Because they have been using many of these weapons in this offensive in the Kursk region, and how they're going to replace them.
Yeah, they're using up what they've received. Neither the United States, the Brits, the Germans, the French, nobody's sitting on a pile of, you know, warehouses filled with tanks or artillery pieces. They've run out. What the last 2.5 years have exposed is the fact that the West is actually weak militarily in terms of being able to sustain combat operations, because the industrial base is gone and they're dependent upon foreign production, or they're dependent upon foreign minerals and metals that they don't have ready access to. They don't have a qualified workforce. So, you know, all of a sudden, it'd be one thing if Ukraine was the only, you know, skillet on fire on top of the stove. But you also got Israel. And so Israel has been getting first call on a lot of this equipment, with Ukraine taking a back seat. Now, Israel's needs have been more on the area of air defense missiles, and bombs that can be dropped by a fixed-wing aircraft. The Ukrainians need artillery shells. The West can't make them fast enough. The West, you know, Ukraine shoots them up quicker than the United States can make them. That's the simplest way to put it.
Yeah.
So this invasion into Kursk is really, they brought out everything they had on the Western side. Abrams, Challengers, you know, and they're all getting destroyed.
How did you find Modi's visit to Ukraine? It seems that he's trying to do something, but nobody knows if he has already talked with Washington and Putin before going there.
Have you ever been invited to a dinner and, you know, they serve the first course as an appetizer, drinks, then there's a salad, then you get the main course, then you get the dessert and coffee? They've already served dessert and coffee, okay? Modi's late to the dinner party. There will be no negotiations. Just, you know, he can walk around and do this all he wants. It's not going to help. The Russians have already said, we're not negotiating. The only thing we're going to negotiate is the surrender of Ukraine, period. That anything else is off the table. So, you know, Modi's going to try to talk Zelensky into surrendering, maybe? Nah. Zelensky's not going to do that. He's too vain, too crazy.
At his face.
Huh?
And during this visit, when you look at his face, Zelensky's face, you see that he's so sad. He's so desperate. He's so...
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's... Zelensky's panicked, but panicked people often don't think clearly. And, you know, Modi would try to offer him a way out, but I don't see Zelensky as taking it. And if Zelensky now says, okay, now we're ready, we're open for negotiations, that's not going to happen. Russians have made it clear they're not going to negotiate.
That's why I've asked this question, because I don't understand why Modi should be there and talking at the same time that you're witnessing that Ukrainians had attacked the Kursk region on Russian soil. And at this particular time, Russians are not thinking of any sort of negotiation as long as they have this conflict on the Kursk, in the Kursk region.
Now, say that again.
My question is, as long as we have this conflict in the Kursk region, there is no motive for Modi to go there and talk with Zelensky because Russians are not thinking of it.
Well, I mean, Russia's been clear. Look, Russia's negotiating position has, let's say, devolved. In March of 2022, Russia was willing to give back Donetsk and Luhansk. Give it back. Just as long as they had guarantees that the rights of the Russian speakers would be protected. That was rejected. So the next phase of Russian negotiation was, okay, you, Ukraine, get the hell out now of Luhansk, Donetsk, Kherson, Zaporizhia. Leave. Pull your troops out. Stop the fighting. Then we'll negotiate. We'll talk. And the Ukrainians said, hell no, we're not going to do that. Russia said, okay. So now the loudest, you know, what they've said is, we're not, there's nothing to negotiate. We're not going to talk about any concessions. So, you know, this, like I said, this Modi's late to the dinner party.
Who's sending him? He showed up.
Huh?
Who's sending him to?
He's sending him. He's sending him. You know, these guys, they're world leaders. They got egos. They think that they can, turn the world around. You know, again, Modi ought to stay at home and see if he can solve his issues with China. You know, they got border disputes there. This is partly just out. I'm just thinking out loud. Zelensky's not going to give in. They're not going to give in. And so the Russians are going to have to kill him or capture him. Or he's going to have to flee to some safe haven in the Caribbean. Who knows? But this is not going to end peacefully.
Larry, what ISIS is doing with the Russian in the Russian prison and what they're doing there and why we have ISIS popping up in Russia?
Well, they've been arrested. You know, Russians have been fighting Islamic extremists for, 24 years at least. It goes back to when the Chechen War started in like 1999. And a lot of the people that were picked up, apprehended during that time, wound up in prison and have continued to show up in prison. You know, it's the Russians really don't have a death sentence where they, routinely stand people up and execute them. They may, who knows, they may want to revisit that. But these were apparently four inmates, four or five inmates with concocted a plan and tried to take over the prison and killed three prison guards. But, the Russian SWAT team stormed the prison, took her back. Those prison riots, regardless of where you are in the world, they never turn out well.
Yeah. And besides this conflict in the Kursk region, The Economist reported that the Kremlin is close to crushing Pokrovsk, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, a vital Ukrainian town.
Pokrovsk. Yeah, when you look at it, it's spelled, we see it as P-O.
Yeah.
And we normally will pronounce things like Po. But in Russian, it's pronounced Pokrovsk.
Pokrovsk.
Which is, why don't they write it that way? See? Why mess with us English speakers like that?
Yeah. They're talking about that this town is a vital Ukrainian town.
Yeah.
And what's going on? Putting just this conflict in the Kursk region aside, what's going on the battlefield?
Oh, in Donetsk, the Ukrainians are going backwards. They're losing territory in big swaths. It's not just a minor incursion here, a minor incursion there. I mean, they're losing big time. And the Russians are making advances upwards sometimes 2 to 3 kilometers a day. So it really is, it's significant.
And how they're trying to, because it seems that in Washington, they're trying to talk about these things there to find a strategy in order to just stop Russia from advancing. Do you think that one of the reasons that they're talking about these long-range missiles is because if the battlefield is not in favor, is not in their favor, that's why right now they want to provide Ukraine with long-range missiles to attack Russia?
Well, I'm not sure they're long-range missiles. The missiles that they're providing right now, so with HIMARS, Storm Shadow, the maximum range is about 300 kilometers, which is, you know, it's a distance, but it's not that far. I don't see the West providing anything that would be capable of striking into places like Moscow, St. Petersburg, or, you know, out past the Ural Mountains. Because to do that will be an act of war and would likely elicit Russia using tactical nuclear weapons. You know, the West is just mad with bloodlust.
And I don't know if you heard Kamala Harris saying that we're going to help Ukraine if I win.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick with that pulse.
Yeah, there won't be, I don't think there'll. I really, you know, in the past, I think Russia's objective, when they talked about denazifying, demilitarizing Ukraine, was still held out the likelihood that they would use, keep Ukraine intact. I don't think that's on the table anymore. I think they're going to dismantle Ukraine and bring it back into Russia. That Ukraine as an independent country is going to cease to exist. I think that's where this is headed.
And in this process, do you think they'll go to Kiev?
Yes.
Capturing Kiev?
Yeah, yeah. No, I think the Russians will take Kiev. I think they'll take Odessa at a minimum.
And How do you find it? I don't know if you heard Joseph Borrell talking about that. We are not part of this war, but we are part of this game. I don't know what he means by this game. It's a war. It's not a game.
Yeah. Now people are, well, that's they view it as a game because their lives aren't at risk yet. They're not paying with their blood, and they're not paying with their own money. They're paying with the blood and money of other people. So, shameful comment on his part, but it certainly reveals the kind of person he is.
Yeah. And the other thing, Larry, would be Germany right now. Do you think that I talked with a German, the Schiller Institute. I don't know if you know that.
Mm-hmm.
Helga Zepp-LaRouche. And
she
said in Germany that there are a lot of people who are not happy with the current policies of German government.
Right.
And they see their future together with the Eurasian policy and whatever that would be, the BRICS. And do you think this type of mindset would get stronger in Germany?
Well, the indications are from public opinion polls that at least in the former East German part of Germany, they used to be under Soviet control. The opposition parties are coming back very strongly, and the party, the Green Party, is going to be losing. So you know, Germany's being racked right now economically, very suffering some tremendous job losses, factories closing, industrial capability declining. And it's all blamed upon the Green Party, Green Party policies. So I don't know if it's going to be too late for them to change, but the change certainly is coming. They're certainly going to back off.
If they're going to move their factories, the car, this production of cars from Germany to China to the United States, how are they going to bring them back to Germany? It's going to be hugely difficult to do that.
Yeah, they're not. They're not. And part of the problem has been the cost of energy. You know, when they lost the Nord Stream pipeline, all of a sudden they're paying 3, 4, 5 times the amount for natural gas. And the idiot rulers that are governing Germany, just they didn't seem to care. They said, oh, well, you know, life happens.
Yeah. Just to wrap up this session, Larry, do you think that with the current situation in Ukraine, in the Middle East, China was trying to have some sort of solution for what's going on in Ukraine? They did the same thing when it comes to the conflict in the Middle East. But at the end of the day, they're not getting any sort of outcome out of these suggestions, these attempts on their part.
Right.
And do you think that they're trying to keep this part from the region? Because it doesn't matter what they're doing, nothing coming out of this type of attitude. That's why, because the United States is not happy with none of these policies. That's why they're not getting anything. Do you think they're trying to change, just reestablish their strategy toward the United States, or they're trying to do the same thing that they've been doing so far, that we've been witnessing?
You mean China?
China, yeah.
No, look, China recognizes now, I think a little late, that the United States is not to be trusted, that the United States is an enemy, that the United States intends to attack China. Chinese are preparing for that. So accordingly, they're trying to reduce dependence upon the West in every facet that they can, and while abusing every power point of pressure that they can exert on the United States. So, I mean, it's a crazy policy by the United States to try to look for a reason to go to war with Russia, but that's what we're doing. Neither the Chinese nor the Russians are our enemy, but the West needs to have these enemies so we can justify the now $1 trillion defense budget.
And when you compare the attitude of China and India, it's totally different. China is trying to get something to come to a practical solution, but India just going there and let's have some peace talks, and nobody cares what Modi is talking about. At least they're not proposing anything.
Well, again, the Ukrainians rejected the Chinese suggestions and Chinese efforts to intervene and help. Ukraine, whatever they come up with now is too late. I'll repeat it. There is nothing to negotiate from the standpoint of Russia. Negotiation implies you're willing to make some concessions, you're willing to surrender some things. Russia is no longer willing to surrender. It's over. The only option is for the defeat of Ukraine, the destruction of Ukraine. That's where this is headed.
Yeah, but in the mind of Ukrainian, it doesn't seem that would be the case. They're still talking about, we're going to invite Russia in the next talks on the peace.
Hey, listen, when you're dealing with people delusional, what do you expect? That's the problem.
Thank you so much, Larry, for being with us today. Great pleasure.
Hey, sorry about the technical difficulties.
No problem at all. Yeah, all right, next all right. time we're going to get it fixed before.
All right, my friend. Always good to be with you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.